welcome to another exciting edition of Near Mint Comic Radio, your local comic shop, shrunk down, gamma rated with both its parents tragically killed before its eyes, and aired live every week only on the Not Productive Network, the only place that would have us. I am your befuddled host, Frank, joined in studio as always by Pete. Hi, Pete. How are you?
Way to read the copy, Frank.
Thank you. That way to call attention to it like it wasn't obvious enough. We, on Near Mint, we rank and review comics from best to worst. That's mint, near mint, good, fair, and poor to you newbies, and try to guide you in what to read and what might be better to avoid. On this week's show, our esteemed guest, author, and comic book villain expert, Jesse Baruffi. Hello, Jesse. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. Especially because Jesse wrote our non-pro book club novel, Otto Van Trapezoid and the Empress of Thieves. Jesse, would you tell us a little bit about this book?
All right. The gist of it is basically two supervillains meet, try to conquer the world, try to kill each other, and then fall in love and try to conquer the world together.
Aw. I think we all are looking for that in our OK Cupid profiles. Is OK Cupid still a topical thing? Should I be switching these jokes over to Tinder now?
I think so.
Or MySpace. Is that big again? MySpace? Anybody?
Justin Timberlake says it is.
Well, you could find us on MySpace.com/nonproductive. I think that is technically true. I think we still have a MySpace.
I'm still on Friendster.
Oh, so, you know. Friendster is like the ultimate in the I gotta think of a social media platform no one could possibly be on. Why does anyone ever mention Orkut? Nobody? Huh? Orkut? Google's Orkut?
I don't know. I've just been hanging around on my Orkut? I thought it was Circuit.
No, it was Orkut.
Oh.
See, I went so, like...
I had a big, long discussion about that on my AOL group.
Oh, that's right. AOL keyword, what was it? AOL keyword cannot speak straight today. We do have an exciting episode for you guys this week. It's
all evidence to the contrary. But
for you folks this week, we have, again, Jesse Baruffi, who is our esteemed author friend, who basically is making a living writing about supervillains falling in love, supervillains conquering the universe, and is actually my go-to source for comic book recommendations, and has been for years. I trust Jesse's recommendation on comic books almost as much as I distrust Jesse's recommendations on anything else in the universe.
Okay, for a second I thought that was going to be unequivocated praise.
Nope.
And I'm glad that it wasn't.
No. Well, it's still sort of praise because, to be honest, you are a magnificent bastard, my friend. All right, let's get into it. So one thing that's been true since the dawn of time is that people like comic book supervillains. Bad, maybe an ill-thought-out analogy. But I think what we're currently in the heyday, the golden age of comic book and geekery. I think, you know, the success of these movies has been unparalleled for pretty much any genre since, like, the rabid success of Westerns in, like, the 40s and 50s. We've got a wellspring of people interested in the genre and interested in in the medium, and kind of the genre, too, because there definitely is something about capes, about superheroes that are, like, this well-defined thing that isn't quite classic literature, but at the same time isn't just sci-fi or fantasy. And part of that, of course, is the appeal of the villains in the story. But what I'm curious about, and what I've asked Jesse to come on and help us with this week, is what is it about villains that are so damn awesome? Is there one thing or one, like, host of things that we can focus on, or is it just sort of inexplicable? Hopefully it isn't inexplicable, or this would be a very boring podcast. Jesse, you had to write villains for this novel. What do you think? What are some of the key takeaways you would have for writing a memorable villain?
Well, I think the thing that you have to consider with villains that makes them that kind of separates, like, a super villain, like a true villain, from just a run of the mill jerk. Because we all meet, like, run of the mill jerks in our day to day lives, or
right,
you know, we have them as bosses or political leaders or whatever, and we don't think of those people as, like, wow, that's a cool villain because he cut my pay and my hours, you know, and said it was for my benefit, you know. No one likes that.
Right.
What makes a villain cool and interesting is they have to have a certain amount of style. And what I mean by style is they do things in a way that's like big and grandiose, and they almost make you want to root for them, like in spite of yourself. Like, you don't want to root for just a run-of-the-mill jerk, but a supervillain, you just like, yeah, that guy's cool, and you feel a little bit bad, but you still feel like you like him.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of wish fulfillment in there as well, where you don't want to be that jerk at work who has to cut someone's pay, but at the same time, that colossal monster who has the gall to make all his employees dress in uniforms and wear robot masks or whatever, that's kind of cool. You kind of want to get away with that. Yeah, I can see that. Pete, do you have any particular takeaways? What's your thing that you most enjoy from Villainy?
I like the style, you know, and there's a sense of freedom to it.
Oh yeah, all right.
You know, it's the guy that the rules don't apply to,
right?
You know, he's bucked the system, and he's living life his own way. It's the appeal of the pirate.
Yeah,
you know, it's the same reason. I mean, pirates are villains.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're thieves and murderers, and yet they spawned an entire genre of people wanting to watch their movies and hear their stories, because it is, again, wish fulfillment.
Yeah.
It's getting this idea of getting to be somebody that you can't in your normal everyday life.
Right. I think that's absolutely true. I also think that, and we might get into this once we start listing some villains and how they work right for us. There is another side to Villainy. And it's a darker side where you could read a character and you'd be like, I do not root for you, but man, you're bad. And I appreciate well done battery is the worst way I could have phrased that. But like, I appreciate how hideous you are as a person. And almost you need a good villain. And I mean this not even like a villain that you want to root for, but you need a well-written villain, a strong villain, just so that you can root for the hero at times. And then there's an entire another thing where I don't know if we have time to get into Grimdark, where like, who the hell do you root for in Game of Thrones? Like, you just wanted all to just end. But all right, let's get right into it. Let's start listing some of our favorite villains and maybe into how they do something well. So, Jesse, you brought up style, and you know what? I don't believe in holding your cards close to your chest in a topic that's so like universal than best villains. So I'm going to go right to the source. For me, when you talk about style and villainy, I'm talking about Dr. Doom. There's something about Victor Von Doom and how high he is on his own backstory, how like committed he is to his shtick. And it's weird because it predates shtick. Like, he kind of invented the shtick. And at the same time, like, he's like, he's an icon of that. I'm going to wear an iron mask. And he's obviously not even the first villain, the first character with an iron mask. But I'm going to wear this iron mask. I'm going to be listening to death metal in my ridiculous European. I'm assuming there's always death metal playing
inside the helmet.
Yeah, inside, reverberating through the robes. And he just owns it. And there's something about him that, like, he literally, like, speaks in capital letters.
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that's, for me, that is style. Do you have any Doom praise, Jesse?
Oh, absolutely. No, Dr. Doom is a good choice because, I mean, he's not just, I mean, he is that sort of, like, ultimate, like, prototypical supervillain. Like, why does Dr. Doom do things? Because he just wants to rule the world and crush everyone else and prove he's the best. There's not some sort of, like, sympathetic motivation there. You know, you could say he's got kind of like a little bit of a code of honor, like, but that's not about because he cares about other people. It's because he doesn't need to, like, that's what guarantees his word, because he's not afraid of anybody. He won't lie to you because he doesn't need to.
Right.
You know, if Dr. Doom's going to stab you in the back, it's going to be through an orchestra of betrayal and treachery rather than some sneaky cowardice.
Dr. Doom is the kind of guy that has a code of honor specifically for the purpose of proving that he is better than you.
Oh, yeah.
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 I have a code of honor and you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I will adhere to mine.
Yeah, he is definitely the character that I most identify with. Like, he's the villain I want to be in many ways. But he's not the only one. Do you have either of you have any particular villains that are like that for you, where it's the person whose style and class is the one that does it for you?
Well, Frank, I have to say, you pretty much are Dr. Doom.
Thank you.
Yes, particularly with your Frank bots.
Listen.
Your army of Frank bots.
You need those. Trust me, when you get to the place where I am in podcasting, you need a bunch of life model decoys to not answer messages and take forever to get back to people.
Yes.
Jesse, do you have a particular character that kind of does that for you?
Are we sticking to comics, or are we
don't have
going like straight up any genre?
I think you could go any genre. Nowadays, I think there's a lot of cross-pollination.
But don't use Trump. That's too obvious.
Yeah, and no Mark Millar references.
Come on now. I can probably cheat a little bit. Like, Frank, you probably remember a couple of years back, back on your website, I wrote a whole month of my favorite villains.
Oh, yeah.
And, so I'm going to cheat and look at that list a little bit here and see who I think. Actually, one that has always stood out for me, even going back to when I was, like, real little, was the original Megatron.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
That is so offensive that you have to say the original Megatron.
It was a name so good they had to keep using it. You have to narrow it down.
There have been like 90 Megatrons since then. I gotta make sure people know I'm talking about the right one.
It's just awful.
What is it about Megatron that does it for you?
Well, I guess the thing is, I mean, you're basically the same age as me, Frank, so you remember, like, when we were kids, you know, there weren't a whole lot of, like, really good villains in cartoons. They were all just like Catholic dunces who just lost all the time and ran away after like trying to spoil the hero's ice cream or something silly like that.
They were colossally incompetent.
Hey, screw you, Team Skeletor all the way.
Not really. He had a lot of bad ideas. A lot of bad ideas.
I'm not refuting any of your arguments. I'm just saying screw you.
Okay, good.
But fair enough. But no, what was cool about Megatron for me was the fact that, I mean, whereas again, some of the other villains were just sort of like, overly evil or not evil enough. Megatron felt like he was basically a villainous general. Like, he was smart, he was ruthless, he wasn't like pure evil for evil's sake. He wanted to rule and conquer, but he treated his men well and he had good strategies that were designed around winning and not just being a jerk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree with that. I also feel like you've read some of the... Well, I'm sorry, continue.
Oh, no, go on.
If you've read some of the later comics with Megatron in it, like, for example, All Hail Megatron, it's a great read because you see where, like, the classic 80s... the henchman who betrays Megatron, basically Starscream constantly working against Megatron and what have you. But like, it's almost intentional because they are an evil army. And if you have an evil army, you have to like worm in some inherent mechanism to reward being treacherous, but also like point all your sub-generals at each other so there's constantly upheaval. It's really like a lesson in Pol Pot, like banana,
trying to say banana Republican.
I was banana republics. Thank you. We're not gonna go that public. Yeah, but anyways, yes. So we're this pointing all your underlings at each other so that they'll never quite make it to the top. It's actually pretty ingenious, again, for what you would consider like an 80s cartoon stereotype villain. Yeah, I think that's a great pick. I think that is an excellent pick. Pete, do you have one?
If you have to go for pressing me for a favorite villain, I think I'd be remiss in not naming the Joker.
Really?
Yes. Okay. The Joker is very much... in a way, the opposite of what you guys were describing. He's got no real ulterior motives. He is the embodiment of insanity, but he's distilled and perfected insanity.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got the style.
He definitely does have a certain je ne sais quoi.
He's not as different from Dr. Doom as you would at first think. He's got his own code of ethics. It's warped and twisted and all based on whether or not something is funny. Yeah. But how many times has he tried to kill Batman, or has one of his henchmen gone to kill Batman, when it would be so ridiculously simple to just put a bullet in his head, and the Joker stops them, swats them away, and says, no, it has to be funny.
There is a whole subgenre for that kind of behavior. I'm not sure what I think about the Joker. Jesse, do you have any strong opinions about that? I was almost going to say that type of character, but I almost feel like he is the icon for what we're talking about. But I don't know what that is. Not quite the anarchist necessarily, like it certainly sometimes, but like this...
There's an element of anarchy, but yes.
I've heard Joker described by certain people, often occasionally people just really criticizing as just sort of a god of chaos, like in the sense that, like, what's he trying to do? Chaos. And, you know, I think the problem with a character like the Joker is he's been in so many different ways over the years, and some of those ways have been really great. You know, like, I will always go to the Batman animated series Joker as my absolute favorite version, not just because Mark Hamill voiced him, but because, like, rather than just make him like Satan in clown paint, like a lot of lazy comic authors have done, they tried to make him that sort of perfect combination of funny and menacing. And, you know, like, whereas exactly what Pete is talking about, like, his ethic is it funny? And I appreciate that more than I just like the Joker being just disgustingly evil for no reason and with no point behind it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I see that. And there's the, it's weird because it feels like I'm calling out a specific Joker and I'm not. But there's the Joker who is just like gore and cutting off your face or cutting up your smile or what have you, where you're like, I don't see why this is any, like, you're a serial killer with clown motif. Like, it's that, none of it's funny, right?
I agree, that exists.
And there's the Crown Prince of Crime, who actually I almost always love. I there's something about that that never fails to deliver.
That would be like the Jack Nicholson Joker?
I would say that would be the Cesar Romero. That I'm going to put a giant penny on you. You know, that kind of deal. And then there's that sweet spot that is, like Jesse said, menacing and funny. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important in fiction where, like, I don't think the Joker would ever work. This is terrible. I don't think the Joker would ever work in reality because he would just be menacing. But in fiction, you know you're watching this or reading this or whatever for entertainment value. So there's something about a character that is, like, horrible but also, like, fun that makes it interesting.
I think the really interesting thing about the Joker is when you look at him throughout his entire history across the different media.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what makes him... I think it fits into, like, this giant meta identity for the Joker. It's part of his character is that he is so mercurial.
Right.
And he can take on so many different shapes. And even when he's written lazy and bad, that just adds a little bit of a twist to this. Who is the Joker? How do we nail him down? The Joker in reality is kind of like that one Batman the Animated Series episode where all the kids are telling their stories of when they saw Batman.
Yeah, yeah.
And what they think Batman really is.
Uh-huh.
In a way, when you look at the Joker's whole history, that's what it's been.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes him really interesting. And there's versions you'll like more, versions you'll like less, but they're all the Joker.
Right. Yeah, and I think a lot of the more powerful, long-lasting characters in comic books or other fiction do that. They manage to reach that point where they're highly subjective. I think Lex Luthor, we might as well
Lex Luthor
go
is a
right
good one.
To him.
But if you can't do that with Dr. Doom, though.
You can't do that with, you could occasionally do, like, so, what was that?
You could do a
Friends?
Joke.
You could do a joke version of Dr. Doom.
Yeah.
Or a gag, or if it's a kid's show, you could do that. But even then, it doesn't quite hit it as well. Lex Luthor, you can definitely, Lex Luthor is
Lex
a villain
Luthor
that has no identity,
around.
Right? He is the opposite of Superman in some way.
Yeah.
But, like, it depends on what. He's either, like, a mad scientist.
He is the one that Superman needs to fight. And he's whatever Superman needs to fight
master
at that
criminal,
time.
Criminal, businessman, politician, whatever it happens to be. Do you have any strong feelings about Lex Luthor and that kind of flexible villain, Jesse?
Now, Lex Luthor is one I'm not as, I'm not quite as knowledgeable about Lex Luthor as some other people. I mean, I know his basic shtick, and I kind of feel like it would be nice if, like, people would, if they would kind of stick to what Lex Luthor is supposed to be, or, like, what he claims to be. Mm-hmm. Like, this idea of, like, I was supposed to be the best human, and then Superman came along, and now I'm just a regular guy, and I hate him for that. Like, I think that's interesting, because it takes, like, someone who is supposed to be, like, it's like hating someone for being, you know, kind of like the best in all of us, because that's interesting. But like sometimes, but I never, and I like that, but I never quite like Lex Luthor in power armor. You know, that always struck me as kind of like, you're missing the point if you're making Lex Luthor slug it out with Superman.
Right. Yes.
So that's just my opinion. Other people feel differently. You know,
I feel like, I feel like he's more of a blank slug of a villain, as in, like, you could imprint anything on him because of his nature. Because he's up against, like, the iconic hero, mm-hmm. he tends to fit whatever mold you put him in. He's usually, like... So one of the things I enjoy about Lex Luthor is that you can... He can be the, like, snively little guy who's, like, envious of Superman mm-hmm. because he's so, like, meek. But also he's so great, he should be able to rise above this, and he can't. He's super rich, he's super powerful, he's super handsome because he's bold, huh? But he can't mm-hmm. rise above this because he is inherently bad. I think there's something...
It's envy.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's something about that. And I think there's a whole range of those vague heroes, villain type things. So just to run off the mouth, we've got the Magneto, we've got the Galactus, who isn't quite a hero, but is like a force of nature. We've got Ra's al Ghul, is, you know, very flexible depending on where you use him. You've got, God, I think my iconic character in the sympathetic villain, the truly sympathetic, not just like a wish fulfillment like Doom, would be Two-Face. Which may be entirely based on the animated series origin. But it's such a moment of... And that's a different kind of villain that we've spoken about so far. Where this is a character, Two-Face, who you really feel bad for.
What would you call it? The tragic villain?
The tragic villain would be a good name for it. It's somebody who you know that if not for the circumstances that were largely out of their control, that they might have had a different story. They may have had a mm-hmm. different role, that they had been thrust in this position.
Magneto fits well into that also.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's a little different. I think, obviously, there's something else to be said in there. Jesse, do you have a character that fits that bill or somebody you want to talk about? The tragic hero.
As far as tragic villains go, I think those can be kind of cool. The one I'll throw out there is from my favorite animated series of all time, Gargoyles, the character of Demona. You guys,
yes,
remember Gargoyles, right?
Yeah, of course. We're the three guys who do.
The Star Trek The Next Generation reunion.
Exactly.
In cartoon
it totally
form.
Was. But.
Yeah. I forget how Demona was tragic, though. She seemed like she was... Well, it's beginning to dawn on me. All right, fill us in.
Now, the thing with Demona was that she was not sort of initially... She didn't set out to be a bad person, I'll say. Like, she kind of... basically, she was sort of defensive about her own kind and bitter towards their mistreatment. And it ultimately led her to keep making bigger and bigger mistakes. Like, Demona's not someone who's like, oh, I agree with her. I mean, you can kind of agree with her idea that, you know, humans needed to treat gargoyles a little better, but everything that happened was, and the show kind of reinforces this, was just her taking that reasonable point and just going too far with it, and ultimately, like, making things worse. So she became a villain through her just constant years of bitterness and defeat and failure, and it just drove her into this state of total tragic war with the world, but there's one really great and punishing moment in one of the episodes where they're trying to find out some, it's like when you've been finding out her origin and they're trying to get some like password from her that only she knows. And when they finally do get it, the password is just the word alone.
Oh,
and as she says, it's just a tear rolls down her eyes and it's just, it's just this gut punch.
I don't know why I'm laughing at this other than being a heartless human being.
You're a horrible person, Frank.
No, it's also incredibly like dramatic for a kid's Disney cartoon from the 90s. Like, you would not have expected that. But yeah, there is a lot of like poor decision-making and just like you're... And she was around for hundreds of years completely on her own.
Yeah.
That's like, that's emo soup right there. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to specifically share, like a thing about villainy that you've always wanted to just get off your chest or talk about?
Let's see.
What do you think about the like? We could ask you about what do you think about brutes? And what do you think about like forces of nature as villain? Like, I've always been kind of like a fan of Galactus because he's never truly been a villain, or rarely ever is truly a villain. He's just a hungry guy in space. Also, I think for whatever reason, I've seen the episode of The Tick with the Galactus stand-in before I read anything with Galactus in it, and now it's always colored my opinion of Galactus, which is probably an embarrassing thing to admit.
Well, I'll say this. Like, some of those characters, I think they're very interesting. Like, Galactus is, I think, an interesting character and great antagonist. I don't know if I quite call him a villain, though. Like, for me, it takes a certain level of choice and, like, clear sense of malevolence to be a true villain. And, you know, I feel like, while, like I said, I'm not dissing Galactus as a character, I would say that personally I do not count him as a villain.
So,
but that's, again, not very up to debate. And
I'm going to say, you can make the argument that he's been around since before the creation of this universe. And whatever transpired to him to make him want to devour worlds or need to devour worlds happened at the dawn of our universe. And he's had all this time. He's supposedly a brilliant scientist. And he... You don't see much about him trying to stop himself.
Self-control.
Or figure out a solution.
Doesn't factor in a lot.
Maybe, but consider also that, you know, like, we as people, you know, eat a lot of things that, you know, probably have feelings on a certain level. And, you know, we're not trying that hard to fix that. I mean, do we consider ourselves villains? I mean... From his perspective, how different is it? I mean,
almost vegans would consider us
smaller
villains.
Beings, you know?
Right. So,
Galactus is an omniversal entity stuck in a omniverse of vegans.
That's
basically
it. I'm just picturing what the Galactus species vegan thing is. Thanks to Pete. No. All right. I want to do one last transition before we go on to talk specifically of the villains that are in your book, Jesse.
Okay.
There's a group of villains that we only teased about, and we haven't given them any kind of like play in this podcast so far. But they're the ones who are just despicable. There are characters, and we're doing a disservice to the listeners to pretend like they don't exist. The villain that is just, you either root for them to die or to lose, or just horrific in some way or the other, but they're still memorable. A lot of these, in my opinion, come from like indie books or from Vertigo books where they can actually, you know, push the envelope and do something that is maybe unforgivable, although not always in the way you might think. So for me, one of the ones, and it's actually kind of a tame one, is from a book that Jesse had suggested to me years and years ago, Saint of Killers from Preacher. I think that's a very interesting, again, he's sort of the Galactus of that universe, in that there's little about the Saint of Killers that is in most of the book that is like, that seems to be sentient in a way. Like, he doesn't seem to have a lot of motivation other than destroy, just go out and kill everything. Yet at the same time, he is a very memorable character. There's something about him that works. I know Pete hasn't read Preacher. Jesse, do you want to talk a little bit about The Sand and Killers with me?
Oh, sure, and absolutely. And I was actually going to bring up another Preacher character as a villain along these lines, but we'll start with The Sand because he's pretty awesome.
All right.
Yeah, now The Sand and Killers, I think what's so scary about him is that you just cannot stop him. There is nothing that will stop the Sand of Killers. He's blindingly fast. He's impossible to kill. And if his gun fires at you, there is a 100% chance that you will die.
Right.
Like, you cannot stop him. You have to... So basically, the only way around that is, like, occasionally, you know, the main character has to reason with him, you know, but for the most part, that's not too easy. And the Saint is not a big on mercy. You know, like, if you read his origin, it's pretty chilling. And while he is a bit of a force of nature, in that sense, you get to see how he ultimately chooses to damn himself to become that. He basically allows himself to become walking death itself.
Right. Right. And there are all these moments that make it, like, memorable. Like, basically, mm-hmm. when he initially dies and goes to hell, his hate is so terrible, hell freezes over. Mm-hmm. And it's just very poetic. And very interesting and overkill, but it made a memorable character. And there are a couple of them from that. What was the character you were going to bring up from Preacher?
Oh, I was going to bring up Jody.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, you remember.
Yes.
Yeah, well, Jody is the character, and I'm going to spoil this for anybody who hasn't read a 15-year-old comic book.
Be a little... No, you should actually not spoil it because the series is coming out. The AMC series. So let's just say one thing that, just feelings wise, without any spoiler, what was it about Jody that made it hideous?
Okay. Well, basically, Jody is like what I called him when I first read him was the redneck from hell. Yep. You know, he seems like he's just going to be this kind of like dumb, mean, good old boy, but he's really, really smart on top of that. And Jody's the sort of person, and he's just a regular guy. He's not like, you know, an unstoppable juggernaut like the Saint of Killers, but Jody's the sort of person who would just, like, murder an entire family, and then if you asked him how his day was, he wouldn't even mention it, because that wasn't even the most interesting thing that happened to him in his mind.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, it's, without going into too much detail about the character, it's hard, but I mean, for, like, the series, Jody makes it personal in every single way.
Callousness would be what it, yeah.
And that's why he's great.
Yeah. I agree with that. And, almost in a related note, I'm going to move over to Watchmen, but speaking of callousness and quasi-villainhood, I would say, again, we're going to spoil an old book. Maybe, not really. He is pretty obviously an unlovable character, at very least. It would be Ozymandias. Like, I feel like it's hard to determine whether or not he is a hero or a villain. It definitely depends on your viewpoint in the story, but there's something about him that is... Like, the fact that he boiled down heroism to its cold equations made him a really memorable, in my eyes, or my mind, character. And there's just something that transcends, like, there. If you do a villain right, whether it's Dracula or, I guess, you know, the governor from The Walking Dead, it'll stick with you and stick with your readers and your watchers. So I think, you know, villains got a place to stay. I guess we're going to keep them. So, Jesse, I do have a major question for you. What type of villain, and I know this is kind of, it's a comic book, it's comic, you know, it's a funny book. Not that they're talking animals in your book. I should stop talking. No, your book features villains. Tell us a little bit about what kind of characters you try to make.
All right, well, I mean... When you're writing a book about villains, you have to make sure on a certain level that the audience is going to want to follow them, because when the story's about them, you don't necessarily... Well, maybe some people want to read about people who are just going around committing butchery and misery, but for me, I feel like that would just be uncomfortable. So I tried to go for... Like, when I talked about villains and me being boiled down to style, that's what I tried to do with my supervillains. Like, I can tell you about the main two, Otto and Esmeralda, if you want to hear.
Yeah. Please do. And okay, I have some opinions, like, about what you think are just style and not, you know, disgusting human beings, because I have some issue with them, but I'll let you go first.
Okay, well, fair enough. But Otto is sort of Otto's a mad scientist. He his sole goal is to use his superior intelligence to rule the world and prove that he's the best through his army of mechanical minions and things like that. He's the type who likes to laugh diabolically and speaking grandiose terms about his greatness. And then Esmeralda is more about just doing like villainous stunts that are just amazingly cool and impressive. Like, it's not too big of a spoiler to say in the first chapter, she steals the entire Louvre,
right?
The entire museum, just because it would make a great legend and a great story, and no other villain had done it. So,
yeah, it seems like Esmeralda was fueled by style, and I would say Otto was fueled by your classic maybe villain rage or just need to
sort
hurt.
Of egotism. And,
Yeah.
So I tried to build characters around that, and I think they turned out pretty well. But obviously that's for the readers to decide.
Yes, no, and they've buzzed us saying that they've decided yes, no. So I have an opinion on this. It feels to me like I know these characters. They're I would say that they shy on the comedic villain side. You know, at no point are they killing entire families just for sport. They're not the Saint of Killers, and at no point are they rarely, maybe Esmeralda a little bit, but they aren't pure like I want to be them. I totally want to be them. There's a little bit of that, but it's mostly like they're fun to read. I will say Otto trends very dangerously close to creepy meninist, like locked in a cave. Angry at the world, specifically dismissive of women. On first glance, it's obvious you're making those parallels intentionally. But man, you came dangerously close to making a completely disgusting hunchback of a jerk.
Well, I think what's important to realize about Otto is that through the course of the story, he grows. Like, at no point do I say, even in the confines of the text, that he is correct in his beliefs.
Right.
Like, you'll notice that even during some of the parts you're talking about, like, every other character is like, what is wrong with this guy? But the thing that I think keeps Otto from being, like, too toxic in that regard is that he doesn't realize he's doing it. And, you know, because of that, once he does realize that, he actually begins learning and changing. So that's just my opinion. And I would never say Otto becomes a good person, but he does learn at least a little bit of a lesson about that particular area that grows in that regard.
That's good. It's always good to see your villains grow yet not turn into heroes or those pesky little things called as anti-heroes. Boo.
I promise that doesn't happen.
Very cool. All right, thank you. This has been a great and eye-opening look into the world of villainy. We're going to take a brief break, but before we do, can you tell us a little bit about where we could find more about this book?
Absolutely. Well, you can always go to my website, jessebaruffi.com. That's JesseBaruffi.com. You can check me out on Twitter as well at Jesse Baruffi. And you can, if you want to buy the book, you can just buy it on either Amazon or Barnes & Noble. It's available on both websites. And you can buy it in ebook form or paperback. And you can also check out my writer's Facebook page, which is just Facebook.com/Otto von Trapezoid.
And of course, you can always find you on Friendster or on,
that's true, on
MySpace. It's the one with the theme music. All right, well, we're gonna take a break on the Gargoyles theme. Jesse, you're welcome to stay with us and come back with us after the break. We're gonna just be off for a minute, and then we're gonna maybe do a quick review.
Okay.
Chill out to this awesome 90s throwback.
Spell for 1,000 years. now here in Manhattan. The spell is broken, and we live again. We are defenders of the night. We are gargoyles.
First of all, how the hell could we have done a half hour on supervillains and never once mentioned Xanatos? We even went into gargoyles and didn't mention Xanatos. And yeah, villain. Totally on the front of the Doctor Doom wannabe him villain, but he totally villain. Totally villain. All right, we're back. This is Near Mint on Non-Productive. We took a brief break to listen to a theme from our childhood. And I think Jesse Bruffy's still online. You still there with us, Jesse?
I am here.
Hooray. Pete, you have a review for us of a comic book, which is convenient considering the nature of the show.
Yeah, I think we need to balance out the talk a little bit for tonight's episode.
Mm-hmm.
We spent so much time on villains. I want to talk about a hero.
Okay,
a
sounds
true
good.
Hero.
Yeah.
One of the first heroes.
Right. Okay,
so
cool.
I'm, as usual, reviewing a Marvel book.
All right.
But sounds... Marvel is Marvel's in the midst of their all-new Marvel rollout.
That's right. That's
the,
right.
Their post Secret
all new,
Wars,
all different.
All mm-hmm. new, all different. And last week, Hercules number one came out.
Oh, interesting. I honestly thought it was going to be like the worst villain possible that you were just going to show. You
said, no, I'm not throwing a curveball here.
Okay, cool. So Hercules. Yes.
Hercules,
the original hero.
The original hero.
In many ways.
From Greek myth, he is mm-hmm. the first superhero in many ways.
Right.
And that is that's how we're presenting him in the new story. He's he's the first superhero from a bygone era, and now he's living in the Marvel, the modern Marvel universe, where so many of the virtues that caused him to be celebrated back in his original day are
maybe not so
not so much valued.
Yep,
you know the drinking, unreasonable fighting.
Yeah.
The violence is the first answer. The drinking.
Yeah, that too. Yep.
The womanizing.
Mm-hmm.
The manizing.
Yes. And the drinking.
There's a different time. The drinking.
Yep, that'll do it.
But for and this has caused Hercules in the Marvel comics even to be the butt of a lot of jokes. And now Hercules is taking note of that and is trying to turn over a new leaf. He's trying to find his place in modern society and remind the world of what a hero he is and, his heritage. Take his place back as one of the greatest heroes in the world.
That's pretty cool.
And it's going to be tough. I mean, he's got to balance that with the fact that he is a demigod. And by all things that's right and proper, you should. He expects to be paid tribute when you come asking him for help.
Mm-hmm.
He also
has... Yeah, he is the jerkiest of heroes, as well as being the first heroes in any way.
Except, you know, he's not really being a jerk. He's adhering to the rules of the society that he's from.
Hmm.
And he encounters some people or entities from his past. Entities that remember him by names other than Hercules. We deal with the difference between Hercules and Heracles.
Oh, really? That's yes. Interesting.
And people criticizing him for going by the Romanized version of his name.
That's amazing.
He also has his no good buddy Gil crashing on his sofa.
Mm-hmm.
Gilgamesh.
Oh.
Ah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Which is, you know, actually okay with me as a Marvel historian.
Yeah.
Gilgamesh as the Eternal Warrior was an was an Avenger for a time.
That's right.
One of the lamer ones, but he was an Avenger. Actually, on two different occasions.
And did he have his own apartment or loft at the time? Or did he also crash on people's couches?
Presumably he did. I don't know. He probably just lived in Avengers Mansion.
No, if it was the 80s and Avengers, then they would have been a cross-cut panel describing his lair.
Yeah.
So if we never got one of those, then he was on the couch.
I'm sure it was in there. I'm sure it was in one of the...
All right.
Cool. I'll have to dig out my Avengers source book from the Marvel Superheroes role-playing game by TSR.
As if it weren't on his bedroom shelf, on his bed's nightstand.
There's a lot of third edition D&D on top of it right now.
Third edition? Fancy. So what did you think of the book?
I really enjoyed it. Yeah. So far, the all-new, all-different Marvel is providing a lot more hits than misses.
Cool. That's very good to know.
We'll talk about that more in a future episode.
Yeah, when we have more time for more reviews, that's pretty cool. Jesse, is there anything you're reading right now, any comic that you're reading right now that you'd like to recommend to our listening audience?
There's a couple. As far as, stuff that is fairly beloved, I'm still reading Astro City, which is still the coolest book, ever, if you like superheroes at all. But as far as sort of weird stuff, one that I've just recently discovered and kind of fallen in love with is a book called The Spire. Have you ever heard of it?
I have not.
It is a weird sort of dark fantasy tale set in an alien world. But it's also basically a murder mystery going on in this bizarre setting. And it's really, really cool. Let's see.
It sounds like you're actually going to
find my copy of it so I can tell you the publisher of it.
For me,
that's what I'm trying to find.
I'm actually.
So I apologize.
That's okay. For me, I'm actually I'm reading Star Wars because everything is Star Wars these days, and it's amazing. And I'm also promising myself that I'll actually crack Fables open. Jesse, if he was paying more attention, would be the one screaming into his phone right now, because I think we bought a copy of Fables years ago together, on his suggestion, maybe. I don't remember the details, but it was on my shelf for years, and I have not opened it.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
It's, read Fables, Frank.
Yeah, it's definitely read Fables.
Fables is over now, Frank.
I can finally commit to
binge read it.
Yeah, you're right. I have no more excuses. All right, I will read Fables. I feel like I have. No, I would have remembered it. It's probably just watching Once Upon a Time on Netflix. So this is the second week in a row that we've compared Once Upon a Time with Fables, and it's not fair. Jesse, do you know the publisher of The Spire?
Fair.
If not, we could probably look it up on the internet or our fans who are listening.
Hang on. I've got the internet myself in my so-called
But I got a better internet. It's published by Boom Studios. Hooray.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Cool. Oh,
yeah,
wow. It's been out for 10 years.
It's just hard to describe the book without going into its weirdness and spoiling, but it's really, really cool. I love the artwork. I love the story. I love the characters. It just sort of came out of nowhere, and it's sort of a new series that I've kind of fallen for.
Oh, I love the art. It looks great. Simon Spurrier and Jeff Stokely. All right, so we got a lot of good things for people to read if they like the picture books, but if they like the regular books and they want a good, nice, long read, I think they should pick up Otto von Trapezoid and the Empress of Thieves, which you can find at jesseberuffi.com, correct?
Yep.
And, of course, if you're dumb and drunk, you can find us on non-productive.com, and we have links to everything on the show. Thank you, Jesse, for joining us. Thank you, Pete, for being one of us, I guess.
Hey, Frank.
Yeah.
Before we go,
I
got to ask you, besides binge-watching Jessica Jones on Netflix this weekend, do you have any plans?
Oh, I do. Thank you for bringing it up. New Jersey Comic Expo is this weekend in lovely Edison. New Jersey. I said that with a joke, but it actually is a nice convention center. Mm-hmm. We cannot wait. We love the fact that there is a comic convention that is on the right side of the Hudson. Bam! And by that I mean the, depending on where you're looking at the globe, the left side?
Yes.
But the correct side of the Hudson. Mm-hmm. We're going to be there. And you know what? Maybe we'll throw copies of Jesse's book at people somehow. We'll have to print them out. We'll get them overnighted to us or something.
Yeah.
But it'll work. Thanks again, Jesse, for joining us. JesseBerufi.com. Thank you, Pete, for being here. Everyone, come see us at New Jersey Comic Festival this weekend in Edison, New Jersey, and stay tuned for whatever's next in your podcast queue. Possibly the Loud Idiots. It seems like there are people here.
Why would you skip it?
Yeah.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.